So, greetings, friends. Today's talk is on the Salata Sutta. This is a sutta that I teach often because it clears up a lot of confusion about the nature of dukkha and our own individual contributions to that. The Buddha teaches that awakening is understanding stress or dukkha, understanding stress and unhappiness, abandoning the cause of stress and unhappiness, craving and clinging, experiencing the cessation of stress and unhappiness, and developing the Eightfold Path leading to the cessation of stress and unhappiness. That third noble truth, experiencing the cessation of stress, is so important. The Buddha emphasizes repeatedly to recognize when you're developing the qualities of mind that are leading towards awakening, or towards becoming awakening. Understanding the first noble truth means understanding that as a consequence of living in the phenomenal world, there will be stress and unhappiness, there will be suffering. This came up last night in class in somewhat tangential way, but it comes up often. The Buddha did not see himself as a savior. He didn't see his Dhamma as salvific in any way, meaning it's not a way of saving oneself from the common ills of the world, or even saving the entire world, which relates to the later developed bodhisattva ideal that the Buddha saw as something that was prior to his awakening. Sorry about that notification. The entire point of the Buddha's teaching is to recognize wrong views rooted in ignorance of Four Noble Truths and to cease our individual contributions to our own stress, our own suffering, and our contributions to the common stress and suffering in the world rooted in wrong views. So understanding our own suffering in that way is also understanding the suffering of others, where it comes from, and also understanding and abandoning our own contributions to the world's suffering. Reading from the article, understanding suffering is understanding that suffering is part of the experience of being alive. When the Buddha first described the nature of dukkha, and not first, he described it this way consistently. He said that birth is suffering. So simply as a consequence of having a human life, we're prone to suffering. Then he went on to say aging is suffering, sickness is suffering, death is suffering. Not getting what is desired is suffering, suffering getting what is undesired is suffering. The Buddha is simply describing the common events of having a human life. We can't escape this. So the Buddha is not teaching salvation from suffering. He's teaching how to recognize it and cease reacting to it, and so to stop contributing to our own stress and suffering and the stress and suffering of the world. Attempting to negate stress is aversion to what is simply present. And this relates again to the modern developed Buddhist doctrines that many are taught as escapism resulting from aversion to stress rather than recognizing, again, having a human life is prone to stress. We can't escape it. The only thing we can do ultimately is cease creating the conditions that cause one to have a human life. Creating beliefs of a better life after physical death as compensation for the suffering present in life simply creates more confusion and delusion and arises due to clinging or wanting any experience to be different than it happens to be. The largest modern form of Buddhism teaches just that, that if you do certain things during the course of your life, mainly repetitively use a chant. In other words, that chant should always be on your lips. And if it's on your lips when you die, then you'll be taken to a type of Buddhist heaven. I'm not speaking exactly to this type of Buddhism using their terms, only because I don't want this to sound like I'm disparaging it. But the largest form of modern Buddhism is taught as salvation rather than recognizing suffering. And much of the other modern schools substitute salvation either for oneself or abrogating, meaning taking the bodhisattva vow, of avoiding awakening for yourself so that, or until all sentient beings are saved. And again, that points to a salvific type of religion that the Buddha never taught. Due to anicca, impermanence, and uncertainty, there is an underlying unsatisfactory nature to human life. There is stress and unhappiness to life. That's the first noble truth. In the Salatha Sutta, a question is put to the Buddha as to what is a distinguishing factor between a well-instructed and well-informed Dhamma practitioner and those that have no true understanding of the Four Noble Truths. And this directly relates to many of the modern Buddhist doctrines that don't see the Four Noble Truths as what the Buddha taught to develop. If they're taught at all, the Four Noble Truths are often presented as an anachronism, and it's not something that we really need to take seriously. And then they point to other later developed sutras, such as the Heart or the Diamond or the Lotus Sutra, as being the true teaching of the Buddha. In my book, Becoming Buddha, I explain very clearly how those developed and that they're not teachings of the Buddha. And again, I always have to say, I'm not disparaging those other later developed teachings. It's simply not what the Buddha taught. And many people seem to have a great difficulty in accepting that. But that's kind of the essence of personal views rooted in ignorance of what the Buddha taught. So it's kind of to be expected. The Buddha teaches, friends, an ordinary uninformed person feels feelings of pleasure, feelings of pain, and neutral feelings. One well-informed of the Four Noble Truths also feels feelings of pleasure, feelings of pain, and neutral feelings. When through the sixth sense base, an uninformed person experiences a feeling of pain, they are sorrowful, they grieve, they become distraught and often irate. The uninformed feels two pains, the pain of the experience and the pain caused by the reaction arising from clinging, meaning clinging to those wrong views. This would be like being hit with an arrow, and then by request being hit by another arrow. As the person is experiencing pain, pain resistance occurs, leading to resistance obsession. So once we've created an identity over someone who needs to resist a certain experience, we become obsessed. And the term the Buddha used, translated from the Pali, is resistance obsession. And another word for obsession is constant distraction or constant dukkha, constant stress. As a person experiences pleasure delight occurs, leading to pleasure obsession, the same thing. We've identified with what we need to be happy now, and we become obsessed with chasing after that. Reacting brings obsession as the uninformed does not discern what is actually present, the origination, the allure, the drawback, or the passing away of the feeling or the reaction. We simply don't understand the impermanence of all things, and if we did, whatever is occurring in the moment, whatever is coming in contact with our five physical senses and our thinking rooted in ignorance would no longer cause a reaction, and so there would be no resistance obsession or pleasure obsession form. We'd simply be able to be present with what's occurring and respond in an appropriate way rather than an ignorant way, meaning ignorant of the nature of suffering and the nature of the impermanence of all things. The first arrow is simply the stress and unhappiness that occurs in the phenomenal world. The second arrow is the stress and unhappiness caused by ignorance, giving rise to clinging, craving, desire, and aversion. In other words, wanting the people and experience of life to be different than what occurs compounds the initial pain of an experience. The Buddha continues, sensing pleasure or pain, the uninformed joins with it. The uninformed is joined to birth, to aging, to sickness, to death, and joined to sorrows, grief, pain, and despair. Through reaction to experience, the uninformed furthers their confusion and suffering. So as soon as we react from a self-referential ego standpoint, we are joining with it. We are, in a sense, claiming the experience as our own. And once that's done, only further confusion and deluded thinking can follow from that. We need to find a way to cease that attachment to self-referential views, to clinging. We need to find a way to interrupt it, initially to recognize it, and then to interrupt it. So now the Buddha teaches how a person well-informed of the Four Noble Truths and understanding stress and unhappiness responds to the unfolding of dukkha. The Buddha's words. The well-informed person, when stress arises, has no resistance. With no resistance obsession is formed. With no delight in sensual pleasure, no pleasure obsession is formed. We're simply staying present with life as life occurs. The well-informed person discerns what is actually present and understands its origination, its allure, its drawbacks, and its passing away. He remains disjoined from pleasure and pain. This is the distinction between those uninformed and those well-informed of the Four Noble Truths. Another way of describing that is one who has developed, and I would say is developing, the Eightfold Path and an understanding of the Four Noble Truths, is able to remain disentangled from the world because they're no longer creating an infinite number of identities, meaning joining with what's occurring. This is me, this is mine, this is who I am. I'm taking everything in life personal, rather than from an awakened standpoint, recognizing that there is nothing personal in the world. All things are of an impersonal, impermanent nature and are simply what's occurring. And they're occurring within the broader framework of the First Noble Truth that dukkha will occur. Dukkha occurs in the world. It's simply a consequence of living in the world. There's no way of escaping that. The only thing that we can hope to do, and that's what the Salatha Sutta points to, the only thing we can hope to do is to recognize the common nature of dukkha and recognize that through our own reactions to what's occurring in the world, we're increasing our own level of stress and in many ways contributing to the suffering of the world. So by gaining control of our minds and our reactions, by gaining control of our minds and our reactions through the Eightfold Path, which begins by right meditation, meaning Shamatha Vipassana meditation, used primarily for deepening concentration, so that concentration can be used to hold in mind. Mindfulness means to hold in mind the refined mindfulness that's developed through the entire Eightfold Path. And in that way, as we are, as life unfolds, we're no longer reacting. We're no longer shooting the second arrow at ourselves. We're simply staying present with life as life occurs. The essence of the Buddha Dhamma. I don't know why my dog, that's Bodhi if you hear him drinking. He always does this to him. I should put his dish away. The essence of the Buddha's Dhamma is to gain control of our minds. In the Vatthakasinthana Sutta, the Buddha teaches that we gain the ability to think what we want to think when we want to think it, meaning that our thoughts and our resulting actions are completely appropriate to what's occurring. We don't become automatons either. In fact, we gain the ability to have each and every moment of our life be meaningful because we're simply present with it without the need for it to be any different than what's occurring. We see the awful events of life as simply an aspect of dukkha. We see the pleasurable things of life as something to be appreciated in the moment, but not to cling to or crave for more of. We're simply present with life as life occurs. And in so doing, we're not creating any additional stress for ourselves and others. So that's the talk for today. I hope you find some benefit from it. The article is linked on the website, becoming-buddha.com. And if you find benefit from these talks, please consider a donation at becoming-buddha.com. Thank you. Peace. Bodhi, stop it. Jeez, come on, stop. Oh, stop. Stop.